We Talk Podcasts is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. The zombie apocalypse is imminent. Could you survive? You'll have a better chance after completing Geek Nation Tours Zombie Apocalypse Training 101. Learn to fire weapons, scrounge for food, and actually run from zombies. The time of the geek is at hand. Geek Nation Tours provides fun and unique vacation packages featuring themes such as the Civil War, Harry Potter, board games and beer, sports geeks, in locations such as Germany, Japan, England, and all over America. Visit geeknationtours.com and get your geek on.
Hey, Owen, here we go. It is episode 135 of We Talk Comics. And this is We Talk Adventures in Pulp. I am your host, Keith, and I am joined by my co-host, Chris. Say hi, Chris.
Did you say 131?
135.
We should start legacy number real quick here. We're coming up on 200 if you include everything.
We got to be getting close.
Time to reboot with number one.
We rebooted with number one episodes, but we kept the legacy numbering, and we did that for about a half dozen episodes. We've offered jump on points. We've done a zero episode. Really, we've kind of covered the gambit.
We should tell our listeners who's speaking there. Today we're joined. I found last week a terrific little comic book on Comixology Submit, and immediately I knew these guys were what our listeners and we like personally. The book is called Adventures in Pulp, and we've got the writer with us today, Brett Harris, who I found out he's a huge Babylon 5 fan, so he'll fit in with us. Creator of Babylon 5, his last name. What is it, Brett?
Straczynski. Oh, he. Oh,
I
bowed down to J. Michael Straczynski. Yeah, he's one of my favorite writers. Oh man, if I could have a fraction of his career, I could die happy tomorrow.
Oh yeah, I am a true believer of any fan should be able to say his name properly, which I can't. I screw it up constantly, but any fan should be. Anyway, we also have the artist on the successful talk about being able not to say stuff and it happens. On this terrific little series, the artist, we have Matthew Childers with us. Say hi, Matt.
Hello, everyone.
And it's okay if you Matt or do you prefer Matthew?
Yeah, Matt's fine. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Okay, and when Ash goes to a pool party, does he bring his own little baggie for the hand, or does he have to ask his hosts?
Well, you know, I think in that case, you know, he had to ask. He's not as prepared in my mind as that. So, yeah.
For those of you that aren't aware, Matthew has a short story in the Army of Darkness, Volume 4, 1992.1 one-shot, which is the way Comixology really lists it.
Now say it five times fast.
Exactly. Yeah, that was a fun little issue, but I think that was done to celebrate the, you know, I guess the release or something. I don't know what the whole impetus was behind that, but it was fun.
I'll say this about Matt's work on that. He showed me some of the artwork before it went to press, and his artwork was so good on that. I didn't even need the script to completely get it. And so that's a testament to his ability right there. He just did a marvelous job on that. And I think, I don't know if it's overlooked because it was a one shot and there were so many people in there, but he truly deserves a lot of credit on that. He did a fantastic bang up job on it.
Well, I should mention that your comic is actually a webcomic and available for free at adventuresinpulp.com. www.geeknationtours.com. And why don't you guys give us the elevator pitch it for it?
we just kind of did some short stories trying to vary the genre a little bit but stay within a pulp style. And the first issue was kind of a noir meets alien invasion story with Dick Ruby and the Case of Little Green Men, which is actually on Comixology as number two. And then we did kind of a superhero satire with Hawk and a Handsaw, where we take the traditional tropes and stick them in an insane asylum. So you have a Batman stand-in and a Superman analog, and they're in Hero Hall of an insane asylum. And we continued doing stuff like that. We have kind of a – Matt had termed it steam pulp. It was kind of a steampunk science fiction story called Ashes of the Immortals. And then we have a fantasy story where we really tried to change it up and did something different. I don't know if it's successful or not, but we tried a fantasy piece where we tried to take a bunch of different archetypes and found a magical excuse to slam them all together with Four Horsemen.
I was going to say, and you know, I think the whole reason behind even starting the site too was it was Brett and I's, you know, way to kind of throw some ideas and some stories out there to let, you know, people see them and hopefully get some, as I think Brett said at one time, you know, backdoor pilots to, you know, to the bigger publishers and stuff.
It was also kind of an online portfolio. Hey, look what we can do. So, it hasn't really worked for us too much so far, but you know.
Well, I think you've only made the jump to Comixology, which is really in point. Websites are great. I love reading comics there on occasion, but they're hard to find sometimes. So I think a bigger platform will help you out. Not to mention the 99-cent price point for your books is completely reasonable. And, I wouldn't have found you without Comixology, so I have a feeling other people will, too. But you mentioned that you have four different stories running through this title. Why don't you guys define pulp? What is pulp? Is it different than noir, or is it a genre unto himself? Or what makes a story fit in your book?
A lot of people keep calling it the genre of pulp, and I consider it more of a style because you can have almost any genre. I mean, Tarzan and James Bond and Flash Gordon were all pulp. Doc Savage was pulp. John Carter was pulp. But they all kind of had different genres. I mean, there's a lot of science fiction there, but there's a touch of noir and just plain adventure. So I wouldn't nail it down to any specific genre. I feel like pulp – back when it originally started, was it tried to be a little lurid with a little bit of sex and a little bit of violence to draw the younger readers in, like make them think they were getting away with something. But now I think it's just almost a throwback to doing just some fun adventure and not too much navel gazing. There's a little too much decompression now, and one of the things I'm proud of with these stories is the pace is fairly relentless. Sometimes at the expense of a little bit of humor and characterization, which can be frustrating, but it really keeps it going pretty good. Matt might have a different opinion. What's your opinion, Matt?
I agree for the most part. I think I think there may be a little bit of a retro feel to what we've done, and a lot of that may be artistically. There's a classic kind of feel. I mean, we've definitely not done something like manga, or we've not done, you know, painted stuff. We've done stuff that I kind of feel like fits more of a 70s, 60s kind of vibe, you know, and I think that's kind of really where I guess my view of it is. But I think Brett's is a little more all encompassing, you know, and that's probably a better way to say it.
Now, on each of these projects, I noticed there's some different ways you're both credited on. Ashes of the Immortal. Screwing up here. You're Brett. You're credited as script And Matthew, you have a plot credit, I believe.
I think with that story, what we did there is, we kind of did the Marvel way, the old Marvel way, and you know, he gave me a real quick, like the story beats, and I kind of decided to draw the panels, and he came back and added the dialogue, which is reverse of whatever every other story we did was. So,
yeah, the other stories were all straight script, traditional full scripts method. But also with that one, you know, Matt originally came up and said, "Hey, why don't we do X?" And the only, I don't know whether I should go into it or not. I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't read it, but it plays into the twist ending. That's one thing that all the stories have too, are twist ending. He said, "Why don't we do X?" I thought, wow, that's a good idea, and I worked backwards from that. That was the climax, and then when I plotted and came up with the characters, I worked toward that twist. So, you know, he came up with the original idea, and then I built everything around that.
Now, Matt, the color palette on that one is completely different than the others. Was that right from the get-go, or did you experiment with that a little bit?
No, actually, with that one, that was called I was wanting to see if we could get our stories out quicker and wanted to play with just doing it in black and white. And it turned out, I was like, well, I'll throw some color, just like a little spot color in there, you know? And it's one of those things where now I'm thinking, I probably should just color that, you know, all together. And I don't know, Brett seems to like it as it is in a way, but I think I'll add some color before we put on Comixology.
It looks cool the way it is.
Yeah. I mean, it does look really cool in a way. I think if I add anything, and I think I've even said this, but it may be like just a hint of color. You know, it wouldn't even be a whole lot, because I just don't want it to look like we didn't care. But at the same time, I like that, you know, that contrast, that just bright red against the, you know, the kind of more grays. It's kind of nice looking.
It actually reminded me a lot of the old Warren Vampirellas for some reason. Have you read any of those? Or
that teeny tiny red dress? Yeah.
Now I haven't read them, but that might be something for me to look at when I go into to update it. But yeah, it's it was one of those things where I just felt like having that spot color would, you know, it really helps the story in a way. But especially if you once people read it and they understand what the story is all about, there's a particular reason for using it. But
and you know, one suggestion I'd made was leave it all black and white, except for as he's approaching Earth, let it gradually go into color. And then once he's on Earth, let it be full color. Almost a throwback to, I don't know if anybody remembers this TV show. It was by Ken Johnson, who did V and the TV version of Alien Nation. It was called Cliffhangers back in the late 70s.
Oh, yeah.
It was a cult show, and there was it was a throwback to the old serials, and it was a Western science fiction story. When the cowboy was above ground, it was black and white. And whenever he went underground to the big science fiction-y underground city, everything went to color. And I thought that would be kind of a neat nod to that.
I have this vague memory of that show, and I don't know whether I actually saw it when it was on or saw the recut ones, because they recut all of the stories that actually had endings into TV movies.
The Michael Nouri one as vampire, yeah. Or Dracula. Actually, he was actually Dracula.
He was actually Dracula, yeah. But I, of course, I can't track any of those down, even in the dark corners of YouTube. Or
a friend of mine found it somehow from England and bought it on eBay, and then had to convert it from PAL to NTSC. I was thinking, man, that's a lot of effort to go through.
That's a lot of commitment.
I would still love to see it, though. I don't know if I want to see it that bad. But
I think if someone else did that effort of work, I don't know if I would want to do that effort of work and then go, it's kind of like it was made in the late 70s. It's I went to similar lengths to see the Logan's Run TV show, and it was not worth it.
I remember seeing it rerun on TNT back in the early 90s, maybe? Wow. or am I just showing my age? It wasn't that long ago.
It's the age thing.
Years, you know?
Yeah. It's a safe place to be middle-aged, Brett. It's okay. We'll get into how we hate kids today, and later on in the episode.
Well, you know, if those kids would just get off my lawn, I would be all right. Because they keep rebooting the comics, usually 52 at a time. It's making me crazy.
So my favorite, actually, of the four anthology or the four titles in the anthology is Hawk and Handsaw. Did I just get that wrong or right?
A Hawk and a Handsaw. Yeah.
Hawk and Handsaw, and I had two questions about it. Number one, how heavily influenced were you by the Batman animated series, or was that an influence at all?
I didn't give any thought. Matt, were you thinking of it when you were drawing it?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I mean, I now I will throw in there that, you know, I spent a lot of time, you know, in the 90s watching the Batman animated series. So there's probably influence there, you know, I guess subconsciously, but no, I don't think there was any, you know, looking at that. As a matter of fact, if anything, the art that I was looking at the time was Disney. I was looking at a lot of Disney animation. So maybe that's where it comes from. I don't know.
Oh, no. I mean, I can almost see some Hercules in there and like that, but.
Yeah, when I was writing the first draft, I loved the thing. It was really more of a therapist psychoanalyzing Batman and Superman. And I loved the first draft, but it was just boring because it was 14 pages of two people in a room talking. And so then trying to add the action beats, it just became completely different and hopefully far more entertaining than it would have been. So maybe I'll do something with that original draft if I can ever dig it up. But it wouldn't be exciting. And I even know Matt was feeling a little claustrophobic. I think we finally started the next story. He was like, finally, I get out of those four walls.
Yeah, but I will say, though, that, you know, in hindsight, I'm going to have to agree that is probably my favorite of the four stories. There's something about that story that really worked, I think, on all levels.
And I'm sorry, but the twist is a little cheap, but you got me. Were you inspired by the classic Dr. joke? I won't wreck it any further than that, but...
Well, you know, the original title actually comes from Shakespeare. I think I even quote it in the story, and I thought, well, I've got to work that into the twist, just if anything, because, you know, I've got a character named Hawk. You know, you've got to find a way, and to be honest, aren't all of our twists a little bit cheesy? I mean, our goal is to throw a cheesy twist in there while simultaneously, hopefully, you'll never see it coming. And if we got you, good.
So I noticed you're both from Bristol, Tennessee. How did you guys meet?
Our wives went to high school together, and they kind of reconnected a while back. And, you know, while they're having lunch one day, it's like, you know, my husband wants to write comics. Well, my husband wants to draw comics. And then, you know, the light bulb epiphany could be seen probably all the way where you guys are.
Yeah, and you know, kind of to clarify that, though, we both live, you know, around Bristol, Tennessee, but I'm actually from North Carolina, so I've moved up here, and you know, yeah, as Brett said, it was just one of those weird acts of fate, you know, that two friends from high school end up having two husbands that want to draw comics and write comics so badly. So,
Matt, I had a question about the. You colored all it. You did all the colors yourself, right?
Yes.
Now, there's quite a wide variety of color choices over these five stories. How did you decide what palette to use and kind of how to approach the different feels?
You know, honestly, I usually fly by the seat of my pants when I color. now, of course, Ashes and Immortals was kind of born out of necessity in a way, but. The way I color is so odd. I tend to throw in what I call local color, you know, things that the colors that I think they should be, and then go back and add, you know, shadows and stuff to create mood. You know, whereas a lot of other colors will be like, oh, you know, I saw this great, you know, painting, and I'm going to use this for the color palette for the whole thing. I can't do that. And I'm guessing half the time when I'm doing it. So, I'm just lucky that some of the stuff actually came out looking as good as it did. You know, I think Dick Ruby maybe has a little more choice in it, especially in the end part. There's a lot more that I saw this and I'll use it. But yeah, it's really just blind luck, really.
Art by accident, right?
Yeah. Which is a lot of the way I color. If you'll, I'll throw stuff at something and see what sticks half the time. So,
well, you've got that. I will give you credit. You're not giving yourself for some deliberate choice on Hawk and a Handsaw. That you have like three, and you have, you know, three tones, some mid tones on most of the book, and then most of the story, and then full color on the flashbacky kind of scenes.
Yeah, that was, you know, and that's something that, you know, I think even Brett had talked about, you know, the Ashes of the Mortals, the end of that, has, you know, wanting to see the full color at the end. He's mentioned that a couple times when we've talked about doing something, you know, hey, if you could do this flashback, you can maybe do it black and white, and I go, oh, I'll just do it in full color, you know. So there may be some thought put in there that I don't remember. but yeah, I, you know, with that one, there was a lot of red. I use red a lot when I color. It just happens. And I think at the time I was thinking, you know, I've really kind of toned down the, you know, used a lot of greens and reds for some reason. I'll throw in some full color to make this stand out. So, and yeah, so maybe there is some thought put into it.
If I remember correctly, when we were doing Hawk and a Handsaw, we were trying to think of ways to speed it up. And I think at one point when you first started, you were trying to keep the palette simple, like the red and that kind of sickly green, mm-hmm. and then use the full color for the origin stories, and then went back to that. And then I think gradually just got back into the full color because of all the reds you were using in the actual rooms, because I think they were like colored red mainly because of I think you had compared it to their own little hells because they were red.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then when you get to the end too, you've got that I guess the twist. And there's kind of a need for, I guess, full color, especially on that character at the end. But yeah, you know, and maybe that too at the end, it was also me saying, hey, I'm breaking free from these four walls, you know, so.
Yeah, if you look at Carlos's face when he gets out, I think that was Matt's face when he finished that story because he got out of the school. Where Carlos is smiling real big because he can fly again.
Now, you mentioned that all these four stories were sort of a pilot season.
Mm-hmm.
Which one would you, separate answers, please, would you guys most like to see continue?
Dick Ruby, hands down. I could do, I've already got ideas for like over 20 more stories. I could do Dick Ruby the rest of my life. I just, you could take him anywhere. You know, horror, science fiction. Oh man, I would start writing him tomorrow and write him till the day they plant me.
Yeah, I would probably agree with Brett on that. Dick Ruby would probably be the one that, you know, because I end up sketching Dick Ruby a lot just for the fun of it. Hawk and a Handsaw will probably be a close second, but the only thing I think there is that, you know, they are, you know, analogs for, you know, mainstream superhero characters, and I'd rather just draw the mainstream superhero characters if I was going to do that. But yeah, I think I'd agree with Brett, Dick Ruby all the way.
Okay, what were in the influences for the creation of Dick Rick Ruby? Obviously noir and a whole bunch of pulp, but specific titles. Are you a Max Allen Collins man, Mike Danger, Mickey Spillane, like that? Or is it more in the roots of Dick Tracy?
You know, probably actually Richard Diamond, probably, which is right there in the name. You know, Dick Ruby, Richard Diamond. whether it was the old radio shows and then later the David Janssen TV show. Of course, I'm a big fugitive David Janssen fan anyway. I think he was one of the masters of understated performances, especially in time when there weren't many. And so he kind of, I think it was more his personality that drew me to the show and the character more so than the genre itself. Although the Maltese Falcon is pretty awesome, and Sunset Boulevard, if you want to get into that type of noir films as an influence. And Dick Tracy, obviously.
Funny, I don't remember Aliens in any of those.
That is my own personal twisted thing. I want spaceships and everything. Everything is better with a spaceship and an alien. Everything. You just name it. I mean, Full House, better show if those Olsen twins would have been battling aliens. You know, Pat Sajak and Vanna White, if they had to fight an alien every once in a while, I'm telling you, much better show. Everything is better with aliens.
That is a great pitch right there. It's Wheel of Fortune with aliens. Yeah, I like it. Let's make that
up. At least let the Klingon spin the wheel, right?
So you're putting these all out as single issues on Comicology, right? In more or less a monthly fashion, or is that
It's whenever they decide to put it up once we submitted it. I wouldn't call it monthly, but it's stretch of the imagination.
So it can be a bit of a roll of the dice from everything we hear. How long was the cycle for when you first submitted?
Well, listen to me think. The first one took forever. I think it took like almost 4 months. And then it went up right. I can't remember when it went up. It was sometime earlier this year, and we kind of sat on it for a little while because we were just wanting to see how well it did, and then. We submitted another one. I get, you know, it's probably, I don't know, July-ish or so, or maybe June. Maybe it was early June. And then that one didn't take but maybe a month or a month and a half. So it just depends. I don't know how long they, you know, getting approved, they'll approve it in like 2 days, but it takes like a month and a half to 2 months usually to actually get up there.
And then you have a Kickstarter planned for after these come out on Comixology?
No, actually, I think we're going to post that Kickstarter in the next couple weeks. The Kickstarter is going to be for a collected edition. We're going to do all four stories in a graphic novel format.
The question. You list as a planned page count as 64 pages. I'm doing the math there. There's going to be half the – what's the filler going to be?
Well, we've discussed that. I've got a few ideas, and one of the things that we're talking about is if we can reach a certain goal, we've got extra pages we're going to add in. I think specifically for Dick Ruby has some extra pages, but there's even a double page spread for Hawk and Handsaw too. So there's some added content that won't be available online or on Comixology.
Now, you specifically chose a format for digital so you can highlight your art on a web screen properly. Have you experienced any difficulties so far converting that to print?
No. I mean, as far as our comics, I mean, we just turned the comic sideways. People have been fairly happy with it. They've not had any issues. And for the graphic novel, we've already priced it. I've already priced it out and, you know, doing it as a sideways comic. I actually got a lot of feedback from a guy named Travis Hansen who does a comic called Bean. And he does all his graphic novels the same way. They're all wide format and they look really great. So,
well, for the digital reader, we thank you because, your book is something I can grab on my phone if I got 15 minutes down at work or whatever, where I can't always do that with other stuff. So I think it's the way of the future to do more widescreen comic books.
Oh, I hope not.
I was going to say that the irony is we're moving back to vertical for Jigsaw World. We did the first chapter of it. Of course, it was intended to be a print book, and now that we're going to go back and finish it, it's going back to vertical again. So our apologies for ruining your day.
I'm storming out now.
Strangely enough, this is what's weird, is we actually did a poll on our site a while back about, you know, which comic, you know, people like the best, and our Jigsaw World, which is up there. It may be a little bit harder to find than the other two, but it got the most votes, and we were like, oh, I wonder if people, you know, like this format better. But
yeah, I think it might have also, it was actually going up at the time, and I think it might be like polls about the most popular doctor on Doctor Who. You know, it's going to be whichever one's going is going to be more popular.
Least popular president for just, you know, the same. That always may seem magically to be the current one. So what are you looking at for the Kickstarter? Is a hardcover collection is what you're talking about?
Well, I think our first goal is going to be just a regular graphic novel, not hardcover. We want to do a hardcover, but we'd have to reach a certain goal to pull that off. That's expensive. I want it bad. It's but
patch.
It would look so nice on the shelf.
It looks so nice in everybody's hands. That's what I mean.
Well, you know, plus it's easier to sit upright when people come over. Hey, have you seen my book? This is my book. My book is right here. Have I mentioned my book yet? You know, not that I would do that.
Suitable for coffee tables.
Who am I kidding? I would give everybody I know a copy.
No, that's how you get in trouble with Kickstarters, when you start giving stuff away.
So how much prep are you doing for your Kickstarter? Like, have you been researching? Where are you looking for the information?
Most of my information, again, I have a lot of marketing background myself, being in my day job being in an advertising agency, but I also have, like, again, Travis Hansen, who does The Bean, he's done like two Kickstarters a year. Each one of them gets funded, and he's a big source of help for me. He's helped me go through a lot of my stuff and tell me, yeah, this isn't right, you need to try this, and that's where a big part of my information comes from, is talking to him and a few other people who've done Kickstarters. So it's a lot of pressure. I still feel like I have a ton of work to do. I was working on it today, working on the graphics, and it's killing me because I just want to draw, and there's part of me that's like, but I need to do this too because I want that book so bad, and I want to get it out there so people can see it and have something nice to look at. So
we've had quite a few Kickstarter folks on the show, and those we talked to who are in it when we talk to them are really of the I didn't know I was taking on a second job for a month, or maybe maybe this was my primary job and the other thing was my secondary job.
Yeah, it I know on the front end there's a lot of work to do. Back end I'm sure there's gonna be a lot of work to do, but the good thing with ours too is that, you know, we've got the book ready. You know, other than maybe adding a few pages if we get to that point. But, you know, as far as the bulk of the book is done, and, you know, we've even got a lot of the rewards already designed. So I think the biggest thing is going to be, doing some of the, I guess, sketches and stuff like that that we're going to, you know, possibly get for rewards, and that'll be coming from me. So.
Yeah, I think we're offering some scripts for me, so all I have to do is hit print. Ooh, I don't remember writing that line. So, my part's pretty easy on that one.
What are you looking for? Can you tease any of the incentives, bonuses?
I mean, we've got. I've been working on a ton of like new prints. There's going to be original art in there for some of the higher levels. There's going to be, you know, sketches for, you know, quite a few of the levels. I mean, just tons of bookmarks. I think we even talked about, I think there's even possibility of one of the levels getting a Dick Ruby flask as well. So.
Well, if you're going to print stuff on stuff, I want a Dick Ruby T-shirt.
We had a convention just the other day, and somebody was asking about the T-shirts, and we had them up. Nobody bought them. Now that they're gone, everybody wants them.
Scarcity of demand, right there. That's Matt knows all about
exactly.
You got to have less than you have demand, and it'd be like it's like an Xbox now. Like there aren't enough people are lining up.
Yeah, and you know that's something you know you were talking about you know that you saw us first on Comixology, and it kills me because you know as I said I work in a marketing background, and I've done everything in my power to get the book out there, and it's like. It shocks me how hard it is. It's extremely difficult to get people to notice.
There is so much content out there. And Keith, you'll attest to this. I mean, we read more comic books than any eight people put together sometimes. and you just can't get to everything. And having stuff routed through one hole does help. That's the only thing I can say with the Comixology thing is that it just missed my attention until there.
From your lips to editor's ears, let's just hope that they're watching the same avenues you're watching.
It's a challenge. Yeah. I mean, there's so much. I mean Submit is a brings this stuff that had, you know, 100 or 200 or 500 copy runs, sometimes zero copy runs. The stuff that, like yours, that hasn't had. Actually, have you done any print versions of these yet?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. We're on our second run of the Dick Ruby, and then we're on our first run of Four Horsemen. The Four Horsemen and Ashes of the Mortals, yeah. The way we did it, you know, we did the first two stories, and then we did a collected edition of those two in just a floppy format, and that one sold out.
The cover for issue 3 is amazing, by the way.
Oh,
just blew me away.
Well, I appreciate like any of the art stuff. I appreciate, but no, I mean, yeah, like I said, we've
tell me more about how awesome I am.
I like to hear that. We've done print stuff. I think that's the big reason behind doing the Kickstarter too, though, is that every time we do a print run, we're both broke for like months. So.
Oh yeah, and I mean, just the logistics of getting a print copy to say up here in Canada, that really, I mean, shipping wise, it's not going to happen too often.
No,
you might just use them and give them out, or not give them out, but sell them at conventions, and even then, the markup's not that high. It's pretty much what we spend to get them done, just to get copies in people's hands, and usually the people. Are either people who've just discovered us, have never heard of us, it's like, ooh, this looks good. Or it's people who are like, oh, I love your website. When's the next story coming up? And it's like, well, we have one in print here. Oh, I love this movie. Will you sign it for me? You know.
Now, you guys just attended RobCom in Bristol?
Yes.
Is that correct? Mm-hmm. We love con stories. It is sort of the heartbeat of our podcast occasionally. Did anything embarrassing happen there? It looked like it was a cool lineup. A bunch of people I hadn't heard of. A bunch of actors I would have loved to talk to. Did you have any highlights from RobCon that you could tell us about?
I looked like a complete idiot predicting Fantastic Four wouldn't do as badly as it did at the movie panel.
Hey,
you're not the only one who made that prediction.
I lost a mess. You know, I'll be honest. I lost a mess of money on Hollywood Stock Exchange on that one.
Well, you know, it seemed like everybody got bent out of shape about, you know, Johnny Storm being black, and I was looking at it more from, you know, Michael B. Jordan's on the rise, and Josh Trank, and he, you know, they did the Chronicle, and they did Fruitvale Station, and this is going to be a lot better than people thought. And boy, it's almost like you know, people are giving back tickets. I've never seen anything like it.
I liked the movie, actually. It was a good movie. I think all this is retro hate on the last one.
Disney has paid off all the reviewers because they want the rights back. They're just going to drown out anything positive with massive hate.
Something strange.
I say that completely with jealousy. I would love to have the power of the mouse behind Adventures in Pulp. Just behind us, not against us.
Something really strange happened with Fantastic Four, because the percentage of 1 out of 10s on IMDb is just completely out of hand for a movie. Like, I didn't like the film, but the amount of 1 out of 10s and just the pile on and momentum of this is a bad movie was unlike anything I've seen recently. Like, it was just the narrative, is this is a bad movie. It wasn't just people didn't like it. It's like they woke up early in the morning to hate it more. And I mean, I didn't like it, but I still didn't think it was worth that kind of piling on. Like, I wasn't angry at the movie when I didn't like it.
that's the mob mentality.
It's just a movie. It's almost like that favorite uncle who tried to touch you or something. It's really, it is disturbingly venomous. I haven't seen anything like this since Lucas gave us Jar Jar. It's
bizarre. Even Jar Jar was like a couple of days before before everyone went, I'm not sure about Jar Jar now that I've seen the movie 3 times. I'm not positive. I'm okay with Jar.
Well, you know, that 16-year gap, we gave him benefit of the doubt for the first few viewings, and then decided, you know, not liking him.
I think there's a mob mentality to the internet. I think that's where that comes from. Maybe I would never say this as a fact, but maybe there is some truth to the marketing machine behind Disney, and maybe they steered that mob in the right direction. Or maybe, I don't know. See, I've not seen the movie, so I couldn't really say, but maybe it's just that bad. I don't know.
I would say it's a compromised film. And I think that's kind of what we're hearing, you know, behind the scenes stuff. We'll find out in 5 years, what actually happened behind the scenes, but you know, like maybe the screenwriter reshot some stuff. Maybe the producer reshot some stuff. Definitely they made changes because of fan reaction early on, which actually is the more terrifying thing for me. Like, more terrifying than Disney pressure or any other conspiracy theory, it's the idea that they made changes to the film because nerd rage on the internet scared them. And that just completely terrifies me.
Well, yeah.
That they actually reshot.
If it were really all about nerd rage, though, they would have CGI'd Michael B. Jordan white. You know, because, I mean, that seemed to be what people were torn up about. And the thing is, I've seen him in so many things, and he really is. I'm telling you, he is so on his way to the top. He's going to be one of the next A-listers, you know, depending on which way Creed goes.
I think Creed will be the make or break. I mean, you can come off of – people come off of disastrous – like box office movies all the time. It's really about what happens next, and vice versa. I mean, there's people that have done, you know, the Oscar curse is really about you do an Oscar winning movie, but you film 3 other crappy movies that no one's released yet, and then you win the Oscar, and then those get released right away. Like, Jennifer Lawrence went through that. Like, the next 3 movies that came out of hers were like, you know, dreadful films. And everyone's like, why is she making these choices? Well, she made these choices 2 years ago. He's had nothing to do with her winning the Oscar. But anyway, that's Fantastic Four. Chris, you did like it.
I did. Other than, well, all I really had to do is like it a whole to like it a whole lot is every time they said Doom, change it to a nihilist, and it makes sense. No, I actually was not in the mood for a explosions film, and I didn't get one. And I thought going hardcore science fiction was an interesting way to go.
That is a smart direction to go with that particular franchise. I mean, it's one of the most sciencey comic books out there from inception, even through today. And it would benefit more with a science fiction background. But I know I was completely wrong about this one. So
I know from quite a few discussions on the Facebook that I think a lot of people resented the fact that it was another origin story for, you know, one, you've got the Fantastic Four who's already been, their origin's already been told before, you know, on film not too long ago. And there's a lot of backlash towards comic films in general doing that right now, I think. And, you know, you get Marvel who's wisened up, I do believe, in not doing that as much. Even Ant-Man didn't feel like an origin film. It felt like like the second, you know, like a, I guess a
the handing of the baton.
The big thing with Ant-Man is that it was the origin of the second Ant-Man, but you were really, Brett, what's the phrase? In media res? I need the highfalutin writer term.
It was already in progress.
Yeah, like it feels like you're coming in and the story's already got a momentum to it. And that's, every origin story and prequels are notorious for this. It's, you're going back too far. Like, the audience is okay if you come in and just say, that guy used to be Ant-Man, and this guy, we're going to show you how he becomes Ant-Man. The audience is totally fine with that.
and I think with Fantastic Four, if they had just, you know, it would have been great to have them already being a family and just, you know, have them in the middle of, and I think someone had mentioned this to me the other day, and I thought this would be a great idea, is have them going to meet the press, because they're supposed to be the most popular group in the world. I mean, they're famous, and play off that and just have it be a, you know, not, it doesn't have to be an origin story. It doesn't have to be the same stuff we've seen over and over. And, you know, maybe that's just what I think, but I don't know.
As long as I don't have to see yet another Spider-Man origin story, I'm going to be thrilled. I mean, I love the Spider-Man movies, but, you know,
or Batman or Superman.
I do not want to have to see another Spider-Man origin.
I'm hoping that Batman is really, that what we see in the trailer is as much of an origin as there is for Batman. I'm willing to phone everyone who doesn't know Batman's origin and explain it rather than spend another half hour of a movie on it. Batman Begins is the most popular superhero movie ever. I think we're all good. Really, hey, give me a flashback. Give me like a 30-second flashback, and
we did it with Nighthawk in one page.
Anyway, they have been talking that Spider-Man is going to be that. We'll see. We'll see if we have to see Uncle Ben die again. Hopefully not 90 minutes into the film, like Amazing Spider-Man. It was I was also not a fan of Amazing Spider-Man, but that was really. But it was that reaction to telling the origin again. Like, it's a, yeah, there's some people that don't know the origin, but I don't need what Sam Raimi did in half an hour, you've stretched into 2 hours and 10.
Yeah. Although I will say that I really liked, you know, the casting of Spider-Man or the Amazing Spider-Man. I agree there. It was like, really, you know, Marvel's saying they're just going to start him out in high school. And he's already Spider-Man. I'm like, thank God, we don't need to hear it again.
My when the Batman Superman trailer came out, my younger brother texted me, And he said, if I have to see Thomas Wayne shot one more goddamn time. I know.
I'm starting to feel the same way about Uncle Ben. So you know, it could almost be a parallel universe story. You just have Uncle Ben and Thomas Wayne hanging out saying, you know,
well, and
guys, people keep plugging away at us in other dimensions.
Well, and they did it in the Ed Norton Hulk. I mean, they were discarding the original, the Ang Lee Hulk movie, and they did the entire origin in an opening montage. Like,
and did that, I mean, I love that movie.
Yep. No, plus that montage had shout outs to the Bill Baxter series.
Bixby.
Television series as well. Bixby.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, the old 60s cartoons of Marvel were like Doc Bruce Banner, pelted by gamma rays, turns into the Hulk. Ain't he unglamorous? That's it. That's all you need for the entire origin. Like, oh, I understand that completely now. Thank you. Let's get on with the friggin' story.
You know, I love the old Hulk TV show. I grew up on it. And even me, I feel like there's too much paying homage to that series. I want to see, you know, the comic book. I want to see, you know, that's one thing Ang Lee at least gave us was, you know, the Hulk throwing a tank. I wanted to see more, you know, Thunderbolt Ross going after him and more desert work. And, you know, I would love to have seen Rick Jones. But, you know, again, rage of the nerd fanboy.
Oh, yeah. No, I think the next Avengers film, they've hinted at a Red Hulk. So none of us will be happy.
Well, it depends on which Red Hulk it is.
There's more than one Red Hulk?
Oh, of course there is. They Hulkified the Marvel Universe a few years ago, and there's a Red She-Hulk, there's a Red Hulk, there's two Red Hulks, because I think Rick Jones is also a Hulk.
Yeah, no, I thought, yeah, he's a bomb. He's not red. He's blue.
Is he? Oh, he's blue. I might be colorblind.
I think General Thunderbolt Ross is the only Red Hulk running around right now.
Except for Red She-Hulk.
But there are distinguishing factors on the Red She-Hulk.
Now we're just a comic talk. It's your favorite shade of Hulk.
Can we say anything for certain, though, while Marvel's doing their version of Crisis on Infinite Earths? I mean, is there anything we can say for certain at this particular moment?
I cannot figure out where they're going to be. I suspect I know where they're going to be at the end of this, but it kind of looks to me like Marvel's going to end up with basically, like, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earths without the reboot. Like, they've destroyed every other world, smushed everything down to one world, but not everyone's from there. Like, it's like a half reboot.
They're getting rid of the multiverse around the time DC figures out they need their multiverse back.
DC is like, maybe we'll have some. We'll bring back the multiverse. There's some fun stuff we can do there. Marvel's like, one world.
Anything to keep fans from complaining about continuity. Let's bring all the worlds back.
I'll be honest. I've been reading the story, and I actually like Doom's world better than the original Marvel universe. I'm like, this is so refreshing. It's like, this is actually kind of nice. But they'll do something. I've been on a good Marvel bandwagon lately. I've liked a lot of the stuff they've done. I feel like they're making not only fun choices, but it seems more. I don't want to say adult. I don't like that word. I think it seems like it's the stories that are good for kids and adults. Whereas DC, I don't feel like I don't know where they're going with anything they're doing.
Well,
I would love to see more books that are good for kids and adults. I mean, yeah, I mean, I love to read something more mature every once in a while. But at the same time, I remember, you know, growing up, the height of the Bronze Age, you know, the Batman books were more mature than they were in the 60s and 50s and, you know, Silver Age and Golden Age. But it wasn't anything that you would slap out of a kid's hand, you know, like some of the stuff today. So I feel like we're losing future viewers just by catering to, you know, 40-year-old men.
I would say, I mean, DC's got more of that now since June than they have, you know, really in several years. Like,
As a matter of fact, I didn't even realize they were doing that Batmite book. I had listened to the Dan Jurgens podcast the other day, and I thought, wow, I was like, that would be fun.
It is a
fun book. It is a lot of fun. Xander and I have both, my son and I have both been reading it, and again, it's one of those rare E for Everyone books, which I don't think they've just done that in Bizarro since
the
New 52.
Yeah, that was something I wrote a piece on that, and it was one of the reasons we had Dan on the show was since the New 52, there hadn't been an E-rated, and I don't even know, probably for a while before that, there hadn't been a proper DC E for Everyone book. I mean, there's certainly been Teen Titans Go and the cartoon tie-in books, Superman Adventures, but there wasn't one that was kind of closer to in continuity. Batmite's not in continuity, but it feels like part of the main line. It doesn't feel like the side thing that they're doing. And Bizarro, crazy fun. Bizarro is wacky, and Bizarro will at some point be taking place in Canada, which is, you know, a big deal for Christmas. We need that Canadian content. There's not a lot out there.
So have you all properly paid off Lemire for Justice League United?
Oh yeah. A Canadian writing a book that takes place in Canada, you would not believe how rare that is. The last Canadian writer to write Alpha Flight was John Byrne. It is not. It has been drawn by Canadians several times, but there has not been a Canadian writer on Alpha Flight since like 1988.
Did we at least get an alternative cover of Justice League United that said Justice League of Canada?
The first trade is called Justice League Canada.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want the title up there.
And I think number one, there's a flag variant like they did for the Justice League America book.
I know there is flag variant. I just couldn't remember what the title of the book was.
But yeah, the trade, yeah, because the story arc is Justice League Canada. Yeah, it was announced as Justice League Canada, and then they chickened out on it ultimately, and just called the trade that. I mean, it's the maple leaf is still in the logo, but now we've got an American writer on it, so it's a crapshoot again. We'll see if they ever mention Canada again. They haven't in 2.5 issues so far since they since they switched to the new writer.
Well, we got a chance as long as it isn't Scott Lobdell.
Well, I'm enjoying the book, but yeah, it's now you know, light Canadian content for me. Like, you know, I'm not prone to counting Wolverine or Deadpool, because it's
you'll just have to slide over to Brian Vaughn's new book, right?
Oh yeah. Brian Vaughn he's a big fan of Canada. He's his artist on We Stand on Guard is Canadian. His artist on Saga is also Canadian. I suspect that he's a secret Canadian. I think he's like one. He might be a sleeper agent.
Would that make him a closeted Canadian?
I didn't want to use that term. I decided that wasn't a direction I wanted. I was halfway through that sentence. I'm like, no, it's not what I want to say.
See, and I just drag you right back to it.
So how many native Tennessee superheroes are there?
I couldn't count them.
There must be an X-Man.
Wait a minute. No, I was going to say Cannonball, I think. But he may be from Kentucky. I'm not sure.
I think he's from Kentucky.
Yeah.
Rogue's from the South as well, though.
She's from Mississippi, I think.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Well, now...
Or is it Louisiana? It's one of the two. Yeah.
Louisiana, wasn't that more Gambit territory?
He's definitely from Louisiana.
See, that's one thing about DC. At least they make up their cities. So yeah, Marvel, you know, everybody's from New York except for one or two Newtons.
Who have moved to New York.
Yes. That was one thing, reason I was always a big fan of West Coast Avengers back in the 80s. I was like, hey, look, a palm tree. They got an artist who can draw a palm tree.
I was dropping West Coast Avengers stuff this morning. A buddy of mine was joking about how, because he's not a sports fan, he's not joking about baseball. I don't know what baseball is. I'm like, oh, you remember, the Avengers and the West Coast Avengers had that game. That they were playing baseball. It's like, oh, okay, it's okay. Now I know what you're talking about.
I miss those issues. I love those. The annuals were always the baseball.
It was like the old like the Thanksgiving get-togethers of the Justice League and Justice Society. Like those annuals. It was a two-part story. I mean, they probably only did three. Like I talk about it like they did it for 20 years. It's probably three.
Yeah, I miss those annuals. I miss annuals a lot. Those were some of the best books. I used to just love anytime something would come out, X-Men annuals specifically. I'd just eat that stuff up.
Well, because they were one story. They were nice and thick.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't have to get the whole series.
And sometimes
you now get an annual and it's just an extra issue.
Sometimes you get crazy stuff like Art Adams doing like a double-sized X-Men story. You get weird backup stories, and I mean now basically they're just a double-sized issue. Marvel, I don't know, is doing them at all. DC does them basically, and they're a double-sized issue.
Of course, one of my favorite annuals veers away from that, you know, separate story thing. It was back when Wolfman and Perez were doing the Teen Titans, and they wrapped the Judas contract with one of their annuals so they could get all the story pages in. That is still, to this day, one of my favorite annuals because it capped off not only a story arc, but a story arc that capped off like 2 years of building one of the great storylines in comic books.
I just got my my copy of that signed by Ken Stacy, who did the cover.
Also Canadian, you know, just
yep.
We're proud of our Canadian creators.
And Scott Snyder.
And Scott Snyder, who we also suspect is a secret Canadian. He's far too polite to be from New York. Come on. Even upstate, he's way too polite.
See, I think he has to because some of the twisted horror stuff he comes up with, he knows he's got to be mind his P's and Q's, or people are going to think he's nuts. Yeah. where did you get that idea for Severed?
Never ask a writer where the ideas come from. He might tell you.
What's that old Harlan Ellison joke? Where do you get your ideas? Well, I send $20 a year to Saskatchewan, and they send me a list of ideas. And, and somebody took him seriously and kept trying to ask him for that P.O. box.
Harlan Ellison. Don't trust him any farther you can throw him, though.
So a couple of years ago, I'm at San Diego Comic-Con. Joe Straczynski is announcing his production company and Studio JMS, which would ultimately do Sense8, which is incredible. He's telling stories, and one of them is about Harlan Ellison. And he said that he was a struggling writer. He had written a few things, and at that time it was like pre-internet, it was pre-everything, and he just looked up Harlan Ellison in the phone book. And he called him and said, you know, I'm a writer. This is what I've been doing. I've sold some stuff. Now I'm not selling anything. Do you have any advice for me? And Harlan Ellison said, no one's buying your stuff? No. Well, then it's probably shit. He said, what? I said, well, if no one's buying it, it's probably no good. Write better stuff. So JMS threw out what he was trying to shop around and wrote new stuff. And then he started selling again.
Well, that's what y'all always really want is good constructive criticism. but you know, honestly, there's some blunt truth there, and Harlan's a genius. But yeah, a little more guidance would have been fantastic. If somebody just told me, I came across your website, and the reason you're not getting published is because your short stories suck, I'd say, that's fine for you to say that, but please just tell me why they suck so I can make them. make them at the very least suck differently. That's the reason we were thrilled to, when you seemed to like our stuff, and Alex over at Pipe Dream seemed to like it. So it kind of took us by surprise. We weren't used to it.
I think we had a really and going back to the RobCon, that happened almost right after RobCon, and we had such a strange, 2 weeks there. I guess the book landing on Comixology and then RobCon was probably our best RobCon we've had, and that's our third year there. And maybe we built up some credibility with some of the people who go, but it was really, strange people coming and buying, multiple books and just recognizing us and stuff. It was fun. It was a good time.
Well, hopefully we'll have some more stuff out lately. We've talked a lot about the short stories. Haven't really talked much about Jigsaw World. It still has that kind of pulpy feel to it. In fact, mm-hmm. I call it my Flash Gordon, only it's a little more mature, and instead of exploring the worlds of Mongo, he's exploring alternate versions of Earth, which have kind of been brought to him over the narrative. But we're just 22 pages into 88 pages of that story, so that's pretty much going to be Adventures in Pulp for the foreseeable future.
And that'll all be published on your website first?
Yes, we've already got the first one up. The first 22 pages are up. It's just a little harder to find because it was a little bit different than the short stories, because we're actually doing them as 22-page stories. But it's there. It's but next to our creator.
I found it. If you go up the top, there's the little book button that has all our stories listed. The reason we haven't really got it as prominent, and it will be more prominent this coming week, but is that we're wanting to push the Kickstarter stories, since the Kickstarter is going to go live hopefully soon, and that's not included in the Kickstarter. Although, we may think about throwing that.
We may do a separate one for it.
Yeah, that we may even throw in some issues of that as rewards, But yeah, it's on there. It's 22 pages. That was actually our first thing we ever did. That was our first story.
And we were shopping it around and didn't get any bites. And when Matt got the Army of Darkness story, he kind of got tied up with that, and a pitch from Kurt with Kurt Pyers and Adam Knave, and you couldn't keep to the schedule. So we thought, hey, let's go ahead. Nobody bid on it. Let's just go ahead and throw it up. We're proud of it. We like it. It kind of fits the umbrella, and. It got a lot of good feedback on it, so we're thrilled with it and going to at least continue on that initial story arc, the 4-issue story arc, and see where it goes from there.
Oh, come on, Keith! You're not going to claim that Kurt Pierce is Canadian.
Just out of nowhere like that.
Yeah, I was waiting for it and it didn't come.
Local boy makes good.
Not to mention a friend of ours.
I think that's the reason us Southerners really enjoy Canadians. It all comes down to one thing. Who can figure out the strangest, most delicious things to put gravy on? I mean, and you guys figured out gravy on French fries first with was it poutine?
Is that
poutine? Yeah,
gravy and cheese.
Gravy and cheese. That's important.
I'm good.
Combo.
You got me.
As a Southerner, I am shocked. I am shocked that we didn't figure that out first. We're people that deep fry butter. I mean, come on. So that just amazes me.
We also throw bacon on it now. It's
everything's catching on. Right?
We've got a next level. Other people have been copying poutine, so we've got a next level now. Like, we've got bacon poutine. I know I go to a place every once in a while. It's got a fabulous lobster poutine. It's and every time we have some out of town comic creators here for the comic expo, we take someone out and give them poutine for the first time. It's magical. Ooh, their eyes light up. It's great.
Well, it helped that this year's Comic-Con, or Comic Expo, did coincide with Poutine Week.
See, between that and Tim Hortons, you guys just have it all. So,
it's a magical land, that's true.
Yeah, but you got White Castle down there, I think.
Oh, White Castle's overrated.
So is Tim Hortons. I'll be honest.
The only thing nice about Tim Hortons is you can meet everybody from work 10 minutes early.
All right, we want to wrap this bad boy up, Chris?
Yeah, I think we do.
All right. I want you guys plug your stuff. Give us some more. Any last details on the Kickstarter or anything else that you want to plug?
I know with the Kickstarter, the website's the big thing, adventuresinpulp.com. And the Kickstarter, we've got information on there that people can, leave their email address and we'll let them know when the thing goes live. But I want people to read the stories. That's the big thing. Adventuresinpulp.com, and we'll post information about, when the stories get on Comixology and all that jazz. So, it's all good. It's all good. What do you think, Brett?
No, you pretty much covered it. Adventuresinpulp.com. people will find us there. The information on the Kickstarter, our new store, or our next chapter of our Jigsaw World will be starting hopefully soon. Matt's already hard at work drawing it, and it's already been scripted. So,
hey, did the entire call crash there? Or?
Yeah, that's. You know what that was? Okay. That was instant.
I just thought, wow, they weren't kidding when they said they were going to wrap up. I was just ready to move on. Okay.
I told you it was time to wrap. It was time to wrap up. You didn't want to believe me.
These guys don't play around, man.
God, I hate Skype.
That right there, that's instinct. That's I could tell it was time to wrap up. That's what 100.
The internet has informed us they've had enough of us. It's time to stop.
That's what 100. That's what you get for 135 episodes. You just get to know the pace.
and is that the 135 in the triangle or in the regular box? I can't keep those straight. With the reader.
Oh man, I love those triangles. Triangles, brilliant.
This is the only way I could keep track of my Superman books back then.
Oh man, I wish more people would do triangle numbers. It is a lost thing. We need those back.
Remember that, Brett. Remind me next time.
throw triangles up on our issues. they'll know it's a shout out just for them and anybody who heard the podcast.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that's. Now that we're all back together, we can actually end this. All right.
Are we recording?
I am recording. So let's go from just when we pitched it over to you, Brett.
starting over or just go ahead and...
Yeah, from the beginning of the episode.
Oh, okay, well... Hi, my name's Brett.
let's just go from... Matt had said... we really just want you to read the stories on the website. Go there, and you can read them on Comixology. So just come in from there.
Yes, and we'll continue on with Jigsaw World. Matt's already drawing it. It's already been scripted. We hope everybody enjoys what we're doing, and we'll try to decide where to go. But hopefully everybody enjoy the new story as it comes out. It's going to be a lot more dense and a lot bigger than our short stories, but it'll hopefully have that same tone. And of course, keeping an eye out for the Kickstarter for the collected edition of the shorts. So I've done my sales pitch. Now I need to go take a shower because I feel a little bit hoarse, but there you go.
What's that URL again?
adventuresinpulp.com.
That's right. Stay on message. I always say it's not repetitious, it's staying on message.
we do appreciate you guys having us on and doing this, and it's been a lot of fun. It was a lot less painful than I was expecting. I was really scared I was going to make a complete and total jerk of myself, and if I did, don't tell me.
Was this your first podcast appearance, Brad?
Oh, yes.
Oh, fantastic.
I mean, come on. Who'd want actually, to with me? Come on.
Please. Actually, it was mine, too. So.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you know, a couple of years when you guys are on, like, you know, Word Balloon and are getting schmoozed, just every once in a while drop, you know, way back when WeTalk was the only one that believed in us. Where were you? Word Balloon.
You know, just
speaking of which, we have to get David F. Walker back on the show, man. He's blown up.
Oh, man, Cyborg, number one. Was that not fantastic? The fact he actually worked on character instead of just starting with a slam bag beginning?
I love that
was a fantastic start. It was a gutsy start.
I love that he used that 8-pager as like the action part and then, you know, came into the first issue and said, we just had an action scene. Didn't you saw it, right? We're going to talk for 20 pages.
Yeah, I mean, it shows that he's committed to the character and not just the slam bang. And, of course, you know, you got to love anybody who writes Shaft. I've got to admit, I'm a big lover of the exploitation stuff. So, I hope Cyborg has a very long and healthy run. And I hope whenever he decides to leave, he lets me do it.
All right, well, you can hear the We Talk Comics podcast on WeTalkPodcasts.com, also on Comicosity.com, and also on Stitcher, the Comics Podcast Network, iTunes, of course. Rate us on iTunes. Write a review on iTunes. I'm not positive there is one. Maybe I wrote one. But other people should write them. Water mine down a bit, you know, so that the 5 out of 5 looks more honest. You can like us on Facebook, We Talk Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, also We Talk Podcasts. And thanks very much, guys, for coming on. Good luck with the Kickstarter, and good luck with AdventuresInPulp.com. And we are OUT.
Thank you.
Thank you much.